one. High, deep, right field. Home run number 101. Dead central off one of the umbrellas in right field. And this time, he did not miss the elevated two-seamer. Now Kobe Mayne, that's a long drive to left field. Up off the moon and into the bird bath. Mullins and Mayo mashing and mashing. Back-to-back home runs for a 3-0 lead. Swings away and drives the ball to deep center field. It will hit the base of the wall. Westberg is in. Henderson hot on his tail, and he is safe standing. Bouncing ball, Bichette. This will be a game-ending double play. 6-3 turned by Henderson and Mayo. A big night for the Orioles offense as they take the opener from the Blue Jays 11-4.
Kevin Brown on the call, courtesy of Masson. And you heard him. The offensive barrage continued last night. The Orioles have now scored 34 runs over their last three games. Now, two of them, of course, coming against the lowly Rockies. But last night was really, really fun to watch offensively, Jason, because everybody reached base outside of Jackson Holliday. Adley Rutschman returning from being on the shelf for a month.
Smacking the ball all over.
He had three hits. Hey, Kobe Mayo could produce against a right-handed starter. How about that? He had three hits. Cedric Mullins, another vintage Cedric Mullins game, robbing a home run, hitting a home run himself. So much good to come from game one.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Like, you go up through the first game of the Rocky series, and they had played 19 games this month, and they had scored 66 total runs. Right? Only the Pirates had scored less, and now it's 30-something runs.
34.
So, that's baseball. Yeah, I mean, look, facing Toronto in desperation mode, right? Toronto went to their high-leverage reliever in the fifth inning. That's how bad they wanted to win that game when they went to Little. And they shellacked Little from the left side and the right side. That was a game that John Schneider and those guys really wanted, and the Orioles went and took it from them multiple times and destroyed that staff. Kobe Mayo, amazing what happens if you give a kid a little opportunity. You think we'll hear the JV manager talk about we can't win games with Kobe Mayo in the lineup anymore? You think we're going to hear any more of that nonsense? A lot of people slag Cedric Mullins, including Gigi, frankly, quite a bit. Well, guess what? Ryan O'Hearn, the alleged great trade chips, got a 650 OPS since Memorial Day. Worse than Cedric Mullins. So, you know, O'Hearn, the alleged power guy, who has more home runs? Remind me. O'Hearn or Cedric?
Sid.
Yeah. Yeah. And they both should have been traded well before now. But it's great to see what they're doing. Adley's at-bats were great. Gunner's in a nice vein of form right now. Westberg's making, he's barreling everything up. Like, it's good to see. It's too little too late, but it's the kind of thing they have to build on the final 55 games.
It's too little too late, but that's what we were envisioning this year. Like, the young core, everyone contributing. That's the type of offense, but unfortunately, the Orioles are at where they're at. They're still 10 games below 500, and the trade deadline is in 2 days. But I wanted to get back to Cedric Mullins, and it's been really cool to see these couple of standout games recently, and just seeing the fans, and we know that Orioles fans, they're smart. They get the situation, the standing ovation.
Even though the front office treats them like they're a bunch of fools and idiots, yes, they are sophisticated baseball fans.
He robbed the home run Saturday, had a big game there. We know that Sed is a streaky player. In April, he was red, red hot. Then he had a bad cold streak, but maybe this is Cedric Mullins getting hot at the right time for a potential trade suit.
Look, the idea that he had like this decrepit trade value is he's going to have a good, bad, whatever you want to call his season, he's going to have another 2020 season. It might be 23-23. Like, it might be 25-25. I don't know. depend on where he ends up and how much he plays and whatever.
And
but
also
like,
screw that defensive run saves.
Yeah,
the minus
I mean, right.
17,
I mean, and
whatever.
I look, I don't agree with Manzolino very often, but yeah, him talking about the difference between outs above average and defensive run saved and how could there be an 18, you know, an 18 point discrepancy. Yeah, I'm with him there. And I don't know which is more right than the other. Look, I think he's going to play center field. Like, it's not too many center fielders you're going to put in front of him. So, to me, he's still a top 10 center fielder in baseball. Did he get on base as much as we'd have liked this year? I mean, no, but like, he's also in a walk year. It's the biggest disappointment in baseball, and they're batting him 8th and 9th every night. And they crown Jackson Holliday as their leadoff man forever and never gave him a shot to do that. Remind me, when he had a 30-30 season, where was he batting?
Leadoff.
Yeah. So, you know, they squatted on him. He said they never even attempted to re-sign me. I might have done a team-friendly extension here. They completely ignored me. Oh, yeah, and they categorically decided not to trade me when I had the most value. So there's a lot into it. They're human beings. Michael Elias never figured that out, but they're human beings.
Cedric Mullins' time in Baltimore coming to an end, but maybe, just maybe, the team is starting to wise up when it comes to Coby Mayo, where after starting three of the Orioles' first 15 games in July, not counting today, he started five of the last seven games, appeared in six. He's 7-for-14, two doubles, two homers, five RBIs, and Tony Mancelino already said he's playing both games of the doubleheader.
He absolutely should. It's silly. I mean, it is so backwards that it took us getting to, again, barely over 50 games to play to reach this point. This should have happened the moment he got called up and you were already 16 games under 500 or whatever it was at that time. I mean, it is... I'd like to see the JV bocce ball coach come out between games and say, you know what, I want to issue an apology to Coby Mayo. Like, I'm not very good at this. Like, you guys know I'm not really meant for this. Only Mike Elias, Bobo that he is, would have put me in this situation. But, like, I could have handled it better. And me, not just inferring, but outright saying we can't win with Coby Mayo in the lineup because this, you know, we got to play a broken down Tyler O'Neill and Razor Ramon instead of him. That was really stupid. And I shouldn't have said it. And you know what, Coby? You've dealt with a lot of BS since you've been here, both what's been said about you out loud, what's been whispered about you behind your back, and the way you've been handled with your playing time. And you owe better, and we're going to do better down the stretch. You'll never hear any of that. And the guy who really should be saying it is Mike Elias, because Mike Elias is the one who's responsible for us having to deal with Manzolino every day in the first place. But, like, you know, they don't have big boy pants. They're not a big boy organization. So we deal with Bush League stuff like Coby Mayo having to beg and grovel for playing time. And then when he gets it, having it stripped away from him.
So the Orioles won game one of a four-game series, 11-4. The O's are in action right now. This is a makeup of a game that got rained out in April. So doubleheader action. 12:35 was first pitch for game one. And then game two is going to be 6:35. Orioles currently lead the Blue Jays 4-3, top of the fifth inning. All four runs scored via sac fly.
You don't see that very often with this bunch. It's great to see. Smart situational hitting, not relying on the long ball, taking advantage of opportunities to move people over. And to, yes, you can score runs with outs. It happens. Good teams do it all the time. Charlie Morton is battling. I think that's the best way to put it. Doesn't have his plus put away stuff. Not missing as many bats as we've seen with peak Charlie Morton. I also wonder, you know, it's hot as hell. He's throwing 70 plus pitches. Like, you're 14 below 500 or whatever. You're not going anywhere. Like, well, maybe we get him out of it. Maybe we call it a day. You know what I mean? Like, maybe you get him out of here, like, healthy and call it a day and trade him.
I don't disagree. I think we all expected more than two trades, 2 days, almost 48 hours exactly.
I didn't.
I was trying to be optimistic.
I didn't either.
Yeah, they are who they are. They've shown.
You
they,
thought
they've,
one over the
they've
weekend.
They've been here seven freaking years.
Yeah.
They are methodical, navel-gazing, procrastinating losers. As a front office, they are losers. At the major league level, they take L after L after L after L.
Before we step out, I did want to end on a positive note. And yesterday was Mo Gabba Day, and that started in 2022. But I was looking up. Mo passed away July 28th, 2020. And on the anniversary of that date, the Orioles are 5-0 2021, they beat the Marlins 8-7. 2022, that was the Mancini inside the park homer. They beat the Rays 3-0, 23, 1-0 winners over the Yankees. Last year, 8-6 over the Padres. And last night, 11-4 versus the Blue Jays. So, Mo, definitely with the Birds on that day.
It is pretty amazing. A lot of those games, very memorable. And, like, I don't think he'd ever say this himself, because he's not wired that way. But when people celebrate the life of Mo Gabba, as they should, and as when these sports teams celebrate the life of Mo Gabba, like Jeremy Kahn should be incorporated. Like these yes. teams would not, like
yes.
Jeremy Kahn and Scott Garceau, yes. but I think Jeremy in particular,
sure.
are the reason that this city and anyone who paid attention to it fell in love with that young man.
Absolutely.
You know, and so I just, like, I think that needs to be told. Like, Jeremy, being the kind of person he is, was a conduit to take that young man, discover what that young man was all about, and really go above and beyond, giving him a chance to enjoy the gifts he had, to not allow the gifts he didn't have to define him, and to make these teams and these owners and Baltimore aware of what someone with those challenges could still accomplish. So I just hope that doesn't, you know, sort of get lost in the sauce. Trey Mancini had a special relationship with Mo Gabba because of Jeremy Kahn.
I was telling Ben this yesterday. That was one of the cooler moments being a part of this show. Was, remember, that Mancini was a day game, and just
yes.
call after call after that game,
yes.
just talking about the moment, the people in that stadium, because that was very, very special. And look, the fans existed for 16 years now, 15 years, whatever it is. The best moment, the best
Absolutely.
Show was the Big Mo show.
Yes, not even, no question about it.
With Jeremy. And whatever second is, it's a very, very distant second. Well, I was out at One Winning Drive yesterday. Today is Ken Wyman's turn. I am taking a little joy in the fact that it's even hotter today than yesterday. So Ken, he will be calling in.
Football gods know what they're doing today.
Yes. He will
Hat
be
tip football gods.
He will be calling in from practice at 2:45. Oriole Hall of Famer, part of our BBT coverage. He's going to be with the Bobster today at Pickles Pub. Mike Bordick joins us at 3:00, and Buck Martinez, we're going to be talking Blue Jays with him at 5:00.
Yeah, a lot to get to. Perhaps there'll be a transaction made by the Orioles today, although I wouldn't hold my breath. We'll preview the second game. You're going to definitely want to be with us between games 1 and 2. We'll have you covered on the Orioles side there, and it's going to be heavy Ravens and NFL outside of that. A lot of sights and sounds going on at Ravens camp. You know, we've got eyes there with Gigi. And yeah, I mean, look. If they do a number on Toronto here, all of a sudden it opens the door back up, maybe for the Yankees and I guess possibly the Red Sox. It sounds like the Rays are selling. But yeah, we'll keep you abreast of anything going on in the baseball world, as this should be 48 of the more interesting hours of the season from a transaction standpoint.
We gave the offense flowers for last night, but how about the bullpen? 4 2/3 shutout innings pitched. What does the future of this bullpen look like about 50 hours from now? And heck, even beyond going into the offseason, how much of a makeover could be in store? We'll tell you next on The Fan. Orioles, they lead the Blue Jays 4-3 in game 1 of a doubleheader, bottom 5. But going back to last night, Jason, Orioles knock off the Blue Jays 11-4. The offense was stellar. Zach Eflin started the game. He was meh. But the bullpen to follow, 4 2/3 shutout innings. And out of the entire roster, we expect the bullpen is going to be the group that's going to get shaken up the most. They already traded Brian Baker. They traded Gregory Soto. We envision that they're going to trade Sir Anthony Dominguez. Maybe you can get something for Andrew Kittredge. Yeah. But it wasn't the household names yesterday. It was Corbin Martin.
It's the guys you better get used to.
Colin Selby, who got placed on the IL. Your guy, Wolfie, and Cade Strout.
Yeah. Again, these games really matter for Toronto. And the Orioles, the A team, doesn't exist anymore because Soto's gone and Batista. We should probably just touch on, like, when you've got the team's paid broadcasters opining during a game that it probably doesn't make sense for Felix Batista to throw another pitch, he's not throwing another pitch.
No.
Not this season. So that's that. It also, again, begs the question whether they should have known his trade value months ago, weeks ago. And moved off a guy who, on a team this bad, and I got news for you, it ain't going to get markedly better overnight. Whether it would have made sense to move a guy who's only going to pitch a few innings a week and who you have to worry about moving forward. Like, color me always concerned about Felix Batista at this point. He's a big guy with a different kind of delivery who's had a bizarre sort of career, who didn't have a clean return from Tommy John, who couldn't get through the first season back from Tommy John and complete, even though they backed off him pretty significantly and changed that role. And to go from an elbow to a shoulder, I'm concerned. And people talking about how much control you have with Batista, I don't think that's really, that's why you need to trade him. Because I out of that control, how much time is he going to really be Felix Batista, and how much time is he going to be dealing with some sort of an ailment? Like, I see him pitch all the time, and that delivery to me looks different way more often than it should.
Without question.
Like, he's not a guy who's replicating. Even at his best this year, he did not look to me like he's replicating.
Now, you can think of multiple outings that he had where it's like, oh, that's off. And of course, the last time that we saw him in Tampa, where he threw, 36 pitches, he walked three guys, got the save. But that was the last outing that we saw him and probably going to be the last outing of his season.
So I'm going to go on record now as someone who I'd put my mark up against anybody in telling this team what they should do ahead of time. Whoever the GM is, I would be treating Batista next year like he needed to be treated last year, which is you better have another high leverage guy on your roster who's closed games before.
Well, it's not only that, though, Jason. This whole bullpen is going to get reworked. Like, who are the guys that you're like, okay, I'm cool with them heading into next year? And these last 2 months are going to be telling. Maybe one or two of these guys that we were mentioning emerges and could be one of those guys that you could count on for 2026. But when you're trading potentially three or four guys out of your bullpen, it's going to be completely reworked.
Well, and I'm not even as worried about that as just how many of these next men up are going to actually take advantage. And last night they did. That's why we're talking about it. Are going to take advantage of these last 2 months and firmly put themselves in that equation. Again, if they have a real front office at that moment in time and you build a real pitching staff with real depth, not the kind of depth they opined about last year, but Bradish is coming off of Tommy John and Grayson hasn't been healthy in forever. Suarez has never dealt with that kind of role before, and they're throwing names around like Tyler Wells. And I'm like, I don't know if he's ever pitching again. Real depth, healthy depth, then the bullpen could be, if there's no room at the end for McDermott in your starting rotation next year, he better damn sight be in your bullpen. He better not be back in Norfolk throwing five innings of meaningless baseball every 5 days, right? So McDermott, Povich, trust me, they're going to be getting a lot of arms back in return for these deals, and they're not all going to be 19-year-olds. Can one or two of them pop?
Maybe Brandon Young.
Brandon Young. Like that. So that's where the depth has to come from. And then if a Suarez is back on top of that, or Wells actually does ever stay healthy, then that's a cherry on top. But like, if they build out the rotation the way it needs to be built, and frankly, I don't think there's any way in hell Mike Elias in one offseason could check all these boxes. Maybe a real GM, not these guys. And even a real GM, they're going to have their work cut out for them. If you have a real rotation that you think has options six deep that don't include McDermott, that might not include Povich, that doesn't include Young, then okay. And you bring somebody in to supplement Batista if he's still here, who has a closer's background. And yeah, if the Wolfman really pops and sticks, if Corbin Martin, who I've seen pitch a ton at AAA and has always looked like a pinata, if they've now figured something out with him, good for them. But it's going to be an arduous offseason. Like the idea that a couple guys come back from Tommy John and here we go. That's ridiculous.
Well, because they're going to be on innings limits next year.
How could they not be?
Bradish and, yeah, and Grayson. Who the heck?
He can't even be.
You can't
count on Grayson.
Grayson's
got to be in the others receiving votes.
You can't count
on Grayson. If you're coming in saying Grayson's one of my top five starters, you're doing it wrong.
If you're Mike Elias or whoever, you have to go into 2026.
Bro, well, look, they just said he's seeing more people. Grayson's getting some procedure.
Sure.
I told you in Fort Myers, Florida, Grayson's going to end up getting a procedure.
Yeah, so it might be a moot point at that point, but... Coming up at 2:45, we're going to go live to One Winning Drive for a training camp report from Ken Wyman, Jair Alexander, Rashad Bateman. They're both back on the practice field, so that is good news there. But coming up next, we're going to hear some sound from Zay Flowers coming off a Pro Bowl year. How can he take his game to another level? And Greg Lewis talks about Devontae Walker as well. It's Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan.
Man, you just work. I was running hills. I trained with my trainer on specific stuff that I wanted to get done, and we got it done. And I felt like I got faster. I got stronger. I felt better than I did before, even before I got hurt.
Absolutely. Have they said anything to you?
Yeah. A lot of people said that I got faster, that I got more explosive. And, hey, I just put the work in, and I just what I expected.
That was Ravens Pro Bowl wide receiver. That's still weird to say, Jason. Pro Bowl wide receiver, Zay Flowers, who in his second season had 74 catches for close to 1,100 yards, 4 touchdowns, and talked a lot about that at his press conference yesterday, how he feels faster, his teammates and coaches think that he's faster. And he also talked later on the presser, Jason, about they've really been working on the deep ball. He felt very confident that they're going to hit more deep balls this year.
Well, they made major strides in that regard last year, and I think Rashad Bateman, who, let's face it, has a different body type than Zay Flowers and is a more attractive, regular, more consistent downfield option just because it's easier for him to high point a ball. It's easier, you know, for Bateman to win some of those one-on-one jump ball box out situations than it is for Zay. That I think opened things up for everybody else. I think that was a boon to the entire offense. I think it helped Derrick Henry. Like, I think it helped everybody. And I think there is still room for growth. A lot of Zay's big plays, I still think though, let's be real, it's going to involve catching the ball underneath. Maybe it's more like 18 to 25 yards downfield. And then it's that catch and run ability. It's the yak factor. Once you get the ball in his hands, and he's not even in his prime yet.
Ravens did make an addition to the receiving core, bringing in DeAndre Hopkins. Nelson Aguilar is gone, and Zay talked about working with the vet.
He a vet. But D-Hop been doing this for, 13 years? I was 11 years old when he started doing this. So, you know, he vetted. He know what he doing, and he know how to get the younger guys going. He know how to get himself going.
We talk a lot how the Ravens, they like having that guy in the room. And you can go back to Zay Flowers' rookie year when Odell was here, and he really looked up to Odell, and it seemed like they were very close. And now there's another guy that Zay can learn from. Obviously, much different body types and games, but a guy that's been in the league for well over a decade.
I mean, look, this is a future Hall of Famer. This is someone who has been at the top, you know, remained at the top of his craft for about a decade, 10, 12 years maybe. I mean, last few years have been tough. Age, father time, undefeated, all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, this guy understands how to navigate his way through a season, how to prepare himself to play. He's been an expert in contested catches. He has an innate feel for the sidelines. And he's also, he has a high emotional intelligence. He understands where he is in his career. And this isn't about feeding him anymore. It's not about running an offense through him. But if he does stay healthy, I think 3rd and 5 to 7 yards, red zone, goal, you know, goal to go situations, you know, 3rd and goal from the 8. Like there's going to be situations where he frankly, is a more conducive alternative than even a Zay. In certain situations, I still think he's going to have an opportunity to make an impact on money downs and, you know, in money parts of the season, money parts of the football field.
We did a six pack last week or 2 weeks ago, just six storylines that are going to pop during training camp. And I believe on your list, Jason, you mentioned Devontae Walker. He's going to pop and people are going to be talking about him. Well, here's receiver coach Greg Lewis talking about the second year receiver.
Just continue to do what he's been doing. He's a young player. He showed some potential last year towards the end of the season, getting in, making a few plays, had a touchdown against the Giants, and we're just trying to build off that. He's a fast guy. He can make plays down the field. He can make plays across the field. And then also special teams comes into that part. If you're not out there first, all right, you got to be doing something to help the team. That goes back to the unselfish stuff that we talk about with Harv's and EDC and top-down type of stuff. So Tez is working his tail off as far as receiver and trying to hone his craft there. And then also with the special teams, but I'll let Hort talk about that, but he's doing a tremendous job of just being in the playbook, understanding what he's supposed to do, and then going out and trying to make plays each and every opportunity that he gets.
Talking with some of the media members out there, it seems like Tez Walker a lot more confident this year. He's flashing more during practice. He had a couple of really nice plays yesterday when I was out there, but we'll see when the games get real. But he's one of those guys in these preseason games, Jason, that everyone's going to have an eye on.
Yeah, he's going to have an opportunity to shine, and I think he'll take advantage of it. Now, I also think Cooper Rush, this is new terrain for him, and I think it's probably going to be rough at times, and it's just he's been in one place his whole career, and things are different here, and this offense has evolved to a master's thesis level, and he's coming in as, yeah, he's been in the league for a minute, and he's seen some things, but I think there's going to be an adjustment phase. So there might be opportunities for a guy like Walker in some of these games, and he's open, and Rush just doesn't see him, or Rush doesn't hit him. That's what the preseason is for, to work through that stuff. But there's going to be opportunities for him also in some of these joint practices to run with the ones and other guys. They're going to get off their feet, and I suspect he takes advantage of it.
Orioles lead the Blue Jays 4-3 in game one of a doubleheader. We're in the bottom of the sixth inning. Mike Bordick is going to be joining us at the top of the hour. Adley Rutschman not in the lineup in game one. You know he's going to be in the lineup in game two, but a really strong first game back from the IL last night. How crucial is this next two-month stretch to end the season for Adley? Mike Bordick's going to tell us at 3. But coming up next, it's Ken Wyman live.
Sweating to the oldies.
One winning drive. How hot is it? How hot is it out there? And also, how does Jair Alexander and Rashad Bateman look? They are back at practice. Ken's going to tell us next on The Fan. Well, the Orioles have blown it open in the sixth inning. I asked Jacob Calvin-Meyer yesterday, where are they putting the Tyler O'Neill statue at, Jason? He has gone deep again. A three-run shot,
You should put it in Norfolk, because that's where he spends most of his time rehabbing from this, that, or the other.
Three-run shot, and then it was back-to-back. The Razor hit a solo shot, but we'll update the game in a few, because we got to go out to one winning drive, a scorching hot one winning drive. Ken Wyman joins us. And Ken, let's start with the injury news. We were a little concerned yesterday. Jair Alexander, Rashad Bateman, they both missed practice yesterday. They're back on the practice field today. How did they look?
They look fine, guys. Jair Alexander came out and immediately he was part of either the first or second play of full practice and got a pass breakup immediately. And of course, you could hear him talking immediately. He's playing to the crowd when he's on the sidelines, doing his seatbelt thing. That guy's a character, man, but he looks completely fine. Bateman looks fine. Woozie's out there practicing. He looks fine. So it looks like, I guess, early on they've dodged some serious injury bullets.
So this is apparently a day off for the two kickers. Big Looper struggles. Now he's got an extra day to stew on it. What do you think about that, and are you surprised that they're getting a scheduled day off for two, you know, kids right out of college, less than a week into this, when there haven't exactly been the most strenuous practices to begin with?
Well, Hoyland just kicked. He went 5-for-6, missing a 51-yarder. But I am surprised at Looper. I did see him. He came out of the locker room during practice and then sat and watched while Hoyland did the kicking. I'm a little surprised after he had a rough day that he hasn't kicked as of yet.
Have there been any standouts thus far, Ken?
Devontae Walker made a really nice sliding hands catch. Nate Wiggins, nice PBU on DeAndre Hopkins. They were really battling on the sidelines. Hopkins eventually caught it, but out of bounds. But Wiggins, talking to some people who are out here every day, they basically are unanimous saying if you had to pick a guy who's had the best camp so far, it's Wiggins early on. As Sanusi Kane depleted Keaton Mitchell at one point.
Hey, Keaton Mitchell, jeez.
Yeah, and Bo Braid crushed Marcus Major running the football. So it's been a spirited practice.
I thought they weren't going to be in pads. Are they in full pads?
Yeah, they're in pads.
Oh, they're back in full pads. Oh, okay.
They're in pads, and they're hitting.
Scale 1 to 10, how hot is it, Gigi?
Well, if I could scale it, I'm soaked through my shirt hot.
Did you bring a second shirt as recommended?
Good question.
I did not. It's performance, so I'm hoping
it'll
just
performance
sort of
thing.
Do itself. If I were bald, you could cook an egg on my head, but fortunately I'm not bald.
Now, my weather app, and obviously we're not in Owings Mills, but it says it feels like 101, so balmy.
It's warm. It's significantly warm. I don't know what it was yesterday, but I'm guessing that's the highlight so far is the heat.
Is it the highlight?
Well,
that'd be the low light.
It's the standout. I don't know how you
standout,
want to put it.
There you go.
It's basically like I can feel myself cooking. As I was waiting for you to bring me on, I'm sitting behind the shed, and I could just feel my skin baking.
We've buried the lead. Is Dr. Jerry Aloysius Coleman out there, and is there food?
No food. They had food yesterday, though.
Yes.
They did not let the media know there was going to be food, so it was a bit of a surprise. Coleman was here, but I don't think he's here anymore. Maybe disappointed that there's no food, and I think he went to the Orioles is my guess.
That makes sense.
Well, as we were walking out to the field, I did see Aloysius.
It's a veteran move.
Did not bring an abacus, I know, after our counting incident yesterday. But I do not think he's here. I have not seen him on the sidelines here during practice.
All right, Ken, get back out there. Yeah, you should have brought another shirt.
Yeah, I think I've lost 7 pounds.
That's good.
Nice.
So, that's positive.
Yeah, I can't complain about that. And it doesn't. I'm behind the Spotta Pot, so it
smells
scenic.
Nice.
Yeah, that must be
100 degrees right by a Spotta Pot. That smells really nice. Well, Ken, we'll see you around 4:30.
Performance, baby, yeah, sure. Performance.
Keep it cool.
Performance shirts.
Yes.
Save everything.
Before we step out, just updating you on the Orioles score. Colton Cowser drove in Cedric Mullins. It is now 10-3 Orioles.
Yeah, Estrada has completely melted down for the Jays. No control, hitting people, giving up long balls. And then when the Orioles have popped it up, it's found green grass. It's a bunch of Bermuda Triangle balls. So Toronto now, man. If you're Toronto, you go into this second game desperately looking for a win. I mean, you get swept in this doubleheader and you're down the first three games of this series. I get it. They've got a little lead on the Yankees. But again, I just wonder about their psyche. They've been on a magic carpet ride, and it's been a lot of home wins. They start losing 3, 4, 5 in a row. How do they respond?
That's what I was going to say. What's interesting about Toronto, they've been dominant at home. If they lose this game, looking likely, they will be 2 games below 500 away from Toronto.
Yeah, so they you know, we'll see if they can figure something out here. They got a lefty on the mound in the second game who's pitched really well. That could be a little tough.
Charlie Morton in what could be his final start in Baltimore. It was shaky, but he delivered a quality start. 6 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, 3 walks, 2 Ks.
He battled. There was a lot of handshakes and embraces afterwards. This is the end of his stint as an Oriole player. He may be there as a spectator for game two or tomorrow's game. They obviously don't play Thursday. So this is it for him. Pretty remarkable how he salvaged a season that looked utterly lost by early May. I mean, he looked like he forgot how to pitch.
The fact that we're having a discussion about Charlie Morton being a trade chip after April is
pretty
really
phenomenal.
Remarkable, and he deserves a ton of credit for that for sure. Well, at 3:15, we're going to go around baseball. It's our Twib Notes. Aaron Judge, he's banged up. Could the Rays end up being sellers? whatever the heck's going on with the Emmanuel Clase situation. We'll get into that at 3:15. But coming up next, it's Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. Want to ask Bordy his thoughts on Adley. Just how crucial are these final 2 months of the season? We'll also talk trade deadline and the offensive explosion. Now 44 runs in their last 3+ games. Unbelievable. Bordy is next.